space, you've got to be able to keep yourself. What about the psychological elements? Because those early men who went up, the Apollo men, was very obviously had real disturbances. You know, it was very troubled coming back.
Yeah, you're right. The first people to go to the moon, it was a race, right? Kennedy had said by the end of the decade, and it was part of the Cold War, and then Kennedy was shocked. It gave the United States sort of a holy purpose, an absolutely undeniable mandate to race to get to the moon by December of 69. So the astronauts spent all of their efforts becoming technically prepared and almost nothing on anything else. And so to get to the moon and to be able to look back and cover up the Earth with their thumb and to see the world for what it truly is, this tiny little incredibly improbable jewel of a blue dot out there, and to somehow rationalize in the mind. And there were crews that were not thrown together. It was, you know, they only trained a few months. Now, Neil Armstrong, the first human to walk around a planetary body, he was only an astronaut total for 8 years. He flew 3 times. He landed and walked on the moon. And yet from the day he was hired to the day he retired was only 8 years. All that happened so fast. And so some of the guys came back from the moon religiously changed. They had an epiphany. Their fundamental belief system changed. Some came back a little bit crazy. I mean, they run a UFO institute, you know. And some came back alcoholic. They could not deal with the experience, but also the change in life. They had been anonymous test pilots, and suddenly everybody in the world treated them differently. You know, Neil Armstrong, he couldn't even say his name in public, right? Hi, this is Neil Armstrong, and you know, all normality stops from her nod. So we learned a lot from that. And in my generation of astronauts, we spend a lot more time getting psychologically prepared. We have the reason there's a guitar on the space station is because our psychiatrists put it up there, because they recognize that music is necessary for people. And so it's there to keep us mentally healthy. And so I don't know of any astronaut in my generation that had epiphany from spaceflight. It was a deepening and a reinforcing experience that made you look into yourself, but feel sort of renewed in the fact that the strength that got you there was a strength that is a good one. It didn't make you question your life.
It wasn't in a technical term, omnibody.
Yeah, it was not. Omnibody, right?
This is our first audience question from Mark. Taking into consideration all that you've accomplished and experienced, both on Earth and above, in this chapter of your life, what do you value most and what do you eat for breakfast?
Both.
Yes.
In this chapter of my life, what do I value most and what do I eat for breakfast? That might be the same answer. Because I like Cheerios. Do you have Cheerios in Australia?
No, I don't.
I didn't have them here this morning because I couldn't find them. They're like little oat circles. They look like very small life preservers. And I don't have sugar on them. I have them plain, you know. I'm a purist like that. And skim milk. And if you ask my wife, she'll say every single morning, he says Cheerios. And he says, you know, I really like Cheerios. So that may be the thing that I like the most. Now, what I like the most, what I honor and like the most, is having somehow used all the things that I've learned to this point to better understand something new. To me, that is the great delight. To have said, hey, you know, I learned this piece a long time ago, and I learned this piece a long time ago, and I just found out this piece, and they just came together in my mind in a new way. And that is delightful. And if you allow that to happen, it goes on all the time. And to me, that is one of the great essences of what I seek in life. It is to constantly try and occasionally succeed in better understanding the world around. there, you can, you know, have some experiences together, but it's really good to have faced danger together and faced complexity together where it's real. It gives you a shared understanding and a shared confidence. And so we do Arctic survival, and we do desert survival, and we do leadership courses in the bush. And then we also go live on a habitat on the ocean floor. And I was the commander of a crew of six people, including some of my crewmates from the space station. And we lived down off the coast of Florida in a habitat called Aquarius. And one of the beauties of it is when you go outside, by weighting your suit differently, you can get 38% gravity, exactly the same as Mars. Or you can get 1/6 gravity, exactly the same as the Moon. So you can go out and develop spacesuit designs where the center of gravity should be and how big your spacesuit can be. And so we did hundreds of developmental spacewalks on the floor of the ocean. But the other part is you can't leave. If you just came straight up to the surface from 60 feet, all the compressed gases in your blood would come bubbling out as if you just opened a can of Coke, and your blood would be full of bubbles, and you'd get the bends and die. And so you cannot leave the bottom of the ocean. And so that psychological reality has an effect, and it's really excellent training to get ready for what it's going to be like on a space station, where also you can't leave. Well, they train in Russia. They built a whole space station inside a vacuum chamber. And you get inside the space station, and you're working away, and they take all the air out from around your simulator, and then probably through the simulation, they pop a hole in your spaceship. And so you start to hear and feel what it's going to be truly like if a meteorite punches a little hole in your spaceship. And the first indication that your spaceship has a hole in it, before any of the equipment or the sensors tell you that there's a leak, the first most sensitive thing we have is that you feel it in your ears. Your ears say, the pressure's dropping. And so you sense that and you know it. And it's a great confidence builder as a crew to have faced as realistic a training as possible, so that when the actual event happens, instead of being stricken, you instead are, okay, I know what's going on, and I know what we're supposed to do, and let's work the problem.
Second audience question from Denise. Do you yell at the screen when impossible things happen in movies set in space?
Gravity bugged me. The visuals were great, you know. It looked like a spacewalk, but the Earth was going the wrong way. You know, I was the only guy in the theater going, yeah, it's going the wrong way. And it was like George Clooney was trying to pick up Sandra Bullock, like they just met during a spacewalk or something. And she'd been an astronaut for 6 months. What was she doing on a spacewalk after 6 months? And then when emergencies happened, Sandra's going, rah, 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 all the time. Like, what an insult to all of the female astronauts in the office. And they won the Academy Award for the best special effects. It's a good thing because they changed the laws of physics in that movie. So, I don't know, it was okay.
I think the answer is yes.
I'm sorry, I don't feel strongly about it. I'm just the worst guy in all of Canada to watch that movie, that's all.
Oh, by the way, in space, can anyone hear you scream?
It's weird when you, when you're walking outside on a spacewalk, And actually, when you're coming outside, you're in the airlock, and there's the huge pressure hatch, and you grab this big handle, and you turn it, and you can feel it grating, but you can't hear a sound, and you pop it off, and nothing, and you pull it up, and it goes into this metal rack, and you know it makes this big, satisfying metal-on-metal clunk, but it's dead silent. And you grab a hammer outside, and bang on metal, and absolutely no sound. The only way you can hear something is to lean your helmet against it so that the vibration comes through your helmet and then goes inside. So no. And in the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, when Dave towards the end of it, where he and Hal are having a disagreement, and Dave goes outside in a spacewalk. Stanley Kubrick and Arthur C. Clarke, they follow by it, and the only sound that Dave hears is his own breathing, and you just hear him the whole time, and that's what it's like being on a spacewalk, actually. You constantly only really hear your own breathing. It's a comforting thing to hear. You know, it's nice to hear the air going in and out, but nobody else can hear it but you, and you are truly alone in the universe.